Welcome to episode 80. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's Industrial Roundup and with community health, much of the focus for community health remains on drafting, in particular with respect to allied health professionals and for health and allied services. There's a meeting of community health members scheduled for Monday with respect to the Medical Scientists Agreement. That's the agreement that covers dietitians and psychologists and others. It's an opportunity for members to discuss concerns with regards to that particular settlement proposal. Also important to note that the dental therapist's settlement proposal has been reissued. There was an error with respect to the timing of the wage increases in the earlier proposal, so just to ensure that everybody gives their complete and informed consent, we've reissued that settlement proposal. Regarding our health service members, there is a meeting of the HRIR managers group on Wednesday, as well as a meeting of the overarching reference group as we continue to work our way through the review items. Also on Wednesday, we've got a presentation from an academic and a proposed study with regards to gender equity that some members will be staying for, just to get an idea of what is proposed for that research project. I'll be travelling next week through and meeting CEOs in Stawell, in Edenhope, in Neil and Ballarat Community Health. We also start next week on our regional forums. In particular, we're heading to Wodonga. We'll be there on Friday. The focus for that forum will be on the review process. For those people who will be attending, we want you to bring your view as to the items that you think should be improved under the Nurses and Midwives, Health and Allied, Mental Health and Allied Health Professionals Agreements. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHAA Community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is workplace relations consultant Emma Scott. Welcome, Emma.
Hey, Stuart.
Emma, would you be good enough to reveal a clue for this week's subject?
I can do.
So for the benefit of those people who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, would you be good enough to describe the object?
It's a Scrabble board with some letters on it, some on your side and some on my side.
Do you know how to play Scrabble?
Haven't played it for a long time, but you try and make words.
Yes, I have also brought this incredibly useful and informative book, the Authorised Scrabble Word List, the Scrabble Word Guide, which states somewhat improbably that the foreword is by James Bruno of Scrabble fame, and has all sorts of useful tips, such as Chapter 2, Winning Ways, On the Defensive. It is just as important for you to reduce the chance of your opponents getting high scores as it is for you to get the best score you can. On the basis of that particular clue, Emma, what would you say the subject for today's discussion is?
Beating someone at playing basketball.
Would you be good enough to turn around your letters to face the camera? Sadly, Emma, that is incorrect.
Dang.
That is so wrong. The Scrabble board is an interesting thing in the sense that it's a game that involves strategy, precision, and most importantly, words, which inevitably brings us to today's subject, which is how to prepare for the commission. So just in terms of that, I'll just turn my letters around so that we can just note that that is the correct subject for today's discussion. For our members who are involved in a people and culture department or who have the responsibility for HR, there's a very good chance that at some point during their career they're going to need to go to the Fair Work Commission. The strange thing is, when that notification comes, obviously, oftentimes, the first response is to panic. Mm-hmm. And that's really an unnecessary response. So in this podcast, what we'll be doing is offering some tips about how best to prepare for a trip to the Fair Work Commission and to participate in the conciliation process.
So with the Fair Work Commission, when might one of our members be required to go?
The most common example is because of an alleged dispute. There are other examples, such as a member-assisted unfair dismissal application or a general protections application or a workplace bullying application. But today we'll be focusing on an alleged dispute.
So when would a member actually know that they're required to go to the commission?
So the commission will send a notice of listing. But the truth is that a member should know that they're going to be going to the commission well before they receive the notice of listing.
So why do you say that?
What should happen before a notice of listing is issued or before an application is made to the commission is that the parties have worked their way through the dispute settlement process. So you should, the other thing is that you should have received the F10, that is the application of an alleged dispute, before you receive the notice of listing.
So the first consideration you're talking about is making sure the dispute settlement procedures followed. So what does that entail?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Every enterprise agreement has a dispute settlement procedure within it, and that dispute settlement procedure sets out the steps that the parties are required to go through to resolve a dispute. Mm-hmm. And in saying that, you've got to first be satisfied that the dispute in question is one that falls within the scope of that procedure, that is, it's a dispute about the agreement or about the national employment standards.
So with the dispute settlement procedures in the agreement, they're meant to be common clauses, aren't they?
Yeah, so the dispute settlement procedures are pretty much the same. They mm-hmm. are common clauses.
Mm-hmm. So what does that entail in the agreement in terms of what you should be doing before going to the Fair Work Commission?
So the dispute settlement procedures require that the parties to a dispute and their representatives genuinely attempt to resolve the dispute through the processes set out in that clause.
So with generally attempting to resolve, does that also apply to the representatives or just our members?
That's the key thing. It is both. Mm-hmm. Both members, but also the applicant and the applicant's representative.
So tell me a little bit more about the process for resolution before going to the commission.
Yeah, what it does, it requires that the parties attempt to resolve the dispute at the workplace level mm-hmm. Through discussions, firstly with the relevant manager, and then if still unresolved, with more senior levels of management.
So why can't our members go straight to the Fair Work Commission?
Because complying with these steps is a precondition to making an application to the Fair Work Commission. That is, you need to have followed those steps before you are entitled under the agreement to make that application to the Commission.
So if a member doesn't follow that process, then they can't take it to the Commission? Is that's what you're saying?
Yeah, it may create a jurisdictional issue. If somebody hasn't complied with the dispute settling procedures, that could create a circumstance where someone has a right to object on the basis of jurisdiction, that they haven't done the things that are necessary to try and resolve the dispute before getting to the point of notifying the Commission.
So what about collective disputes where it's involving more than one employee? Is there a different rule for that?
It's interesting. So the agreements all acknowledge that in the case of collective disputes that they can benefit by mm-hmm. way of an early reference to the Commission, but it doesn't let either party off in terms of that obligation to genuinely attempt to resolve the dispute, mm-hmm. And it still requires that you make those attempts to resolve the dispute at the workplace level.
So in terms of discussions and the dispute settlement procedure, what about actually just sending emails?
There'll be times where parties are able to resolve disputes through emails, mm-hmm. and it will suit both parties to do that. But the agreements all refer to discussions. And what we would say is that email is not necessarily the best way to exchange views. Mm-hmm. Email is a very unsympathetic way of communicating, and employers are entitled to insist on discussions in order to give a dispute the best chance of resolution.
So why do you say it's unsympathetic?
In terms of putting things in writing mm-hmm. and sending by email, I described it before as unsympathetic. It's a pretty difficult medium by which to achieve mutual understanding. It's too easy to be perceived as being rude or angry or abrupt by email. Mm-hmm. By email, you don't get a chance to read the mood of a room. It's a very different experience when people are in the same room together as opposed to exchanging emails.
That makes sense. So what happens if you know that a party hasn't followed the dispute settlement procedure before going to the commission? Do you just let them still put an F10 in?
So just in terms of if you are aware, what we would recommend is that rather than say waiting until you get to the commission to say, well, I don't think the necessary steps have been followed and mm-hmm. that there should be some kind of jurisdictional objection to the application, what we would recommend is that people raise that with the notifying party mm-hmm. at the earliest opportunity. Mm-hmm. And the way that might unfold is a letter to the other party stating, we don't believe that you've followed the dispute settlement procedures, and that giving them an opportunity really to rectify that.
Mm-hmm. So why do you actually recommend that?
One of the things is that by the time everybody's in the room, and sometimes, you know, I'm thinking particularly about rural and regional members who may have travelled some considerable distance, mm-hmm. To raise at that point that the party shouldn't be there at all, mm-hmm. and that the Commission should dismiss the current application, mm-hmm. Has the tendency to waste an opportunity. And our sense would be that the Commission will want the parties to raise those concerns before getting to the Commission. I'd also make the point that between the point in time that you receive a notice of listing from the Fair Work Commission and the actual listing, there's usually a period of a week or more. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason not to seek that, to use that time to good effect. So in that letter, what we would recommend is that people say that, well, we don't think that you have complied, but we are available to meet to satisfy the requirements of the dispute settlement procedure before the scheduled listing. Mm-hmm. In that same letter, though, I think it is worth identifying that, look, should you refuse to meet, mm-hmm. That we reserve the right to rely on this correspondence on the question of jurisdiction.
So if a member gets a dispute form from the Commission and they've realised that the dispute settlement procedures occurred and that's been met, what's next steps?
Review the F10.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of the F10, what is that?
So the F10 is a form of the Fair Work Commission, and it's the application form that you use to notify an alleged dispute to the Commission.
So once members have done the first consideration of the dispute settlement procedure and making sure that's being complied with, mm-hmm. is reviewing the F10 the next consideration?
Yeah, it is. It's always important to review that document very, very closely.
So for a practical question, when might a member actually receive an F10?
Yes, so the person making the application, which mm-hmm. will most commonly be the union, should be serving the F10 on you.
Mm-hmm. So is the applicant sending the form to our members, not the Commission, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And that's a point of difference, say, with something like an unfair dismissal. Mm-hmm. When members receive an unfair dismissal, they receive everything from the Commission. Mm-hmm. But for an application of this nature, it should be the applicant that serves it on our member.
So in terms of the F10, we've been talking about it a lot. What does it actually include in it?
Well, it's the application, so it has a lot of information mm-hmm. About the application from the perspective of the person that's making that application. I should say, though, if it is that you don't receive it and haven't received it, first port of call would be to ring up the representative or the applicant mm-hmm. And ask for a copy of the F10. If you can't get it from the applicant, then at that point you might ask the Commission. But it's there are some rules around that which we will get to, which we'll get to a little bit later in this podcast around communicating with the Commission mm-hmm. that will need to be adhered to. But the kind of things that you find in an F10 include the name of the agreement under which the dispute falls, mm-hmm. The provisions of the agreement that are relevant to the dispute settling process, but also to the dispute itself, a description of the steps that have been undertaken to resolve the dispute, a description of the dispute itself, mm-hmm. as well as oftentimes the remedy being sought by the applicant.
So when first looking at an F10, what should one of our members be looking at?
What they're looking for is what it is they agree with and what it is they don't agree with.
So for example?
To take a really basic example, that the right industrial instrument is being referred to, mm-hmm. and assuming that the dispute settlement procedures have been followed, whether or not the clauses being identified as being the subject of dispute match up with the clauses that have been identified during the dispute settlement procedure.
Mm-hmm. So is that really about avoiding a dispute about their dispute?
That's right. And then you get to the circumstances of the dispute itself, mm-hmm. Which include the things that give rise to the dispute and the steps that have been undertaken to resolve that dispute.
So what else should members be looking for?
So in terms of the description of the dispute itself, mm-hmm. You need to look for points, again, that you either agree with or disagree with.
Mm-hmm. And what is that of benefit to members to do?
So just in terms of the reason that you're looking for the things that you agree with, mm-hmm. when you identify things that you agree with, what you're doing is narrowing the scope of the dispute. It means you're making it a smaller problem and that the Commission's energy can be directed towards the things that the parties disagree on rather than directed towards establishing what the parties agree on.
And so in terms of the narrative, what else are you looking for in that?
Yeah, so the narrative of the dispute is a really interesting thing. That's where people are describing in the application what the dispute is. A dispute narrative is a story. And in saying that, I'm not trying to suggest that it's not true or not accurate, or, at least from their perspective. But it tells you a lot about the application. It's hugely informative as to what narrative someone is electing to put forward.
So how so?
What somebody chooses to leave out of their narrative about a dispute is a pretty solid indication of the thing that they're most concerned about. A lot of members will be familiar with receiving, for instance, an application for unfair dismissal, that as part of that application, the conduct or event that resulted in a termination of employment is significantly downplayed. And that's always a signal that they're very uncomfortable with that subject matter. So similarly, what an applicant chooses to omit tells you what they're most worried about.
So how does that actually help in practical terms?
It helps you prepare. It tells you that there are gaps that need to be filled in, that there is a particular narrative thread that effectively needs to be counted as part of your submissions.
So should a member actually file a response to an F10?
Members should certainly consider filing a response to an F10. The purpose of responding is really to get some work done before you actually get to the Commission itself. For example, a response may help narrow the scope of the dispute or start to do some of the work that you would otherwise do at the Commission in terms of letting the Commission know what the issues are. So really, the purpose of a response might be to counter something that's been raised, but more importantly, you're doing work effectively before you start conciliation. That's the purpose of a response.
And so what's about the importance about sending correspondence to the Commission?
So if it is that you're sending something to the Commission, it's really essential that you serve a copy of that on the other party. That is, the Commission is an independent body and it's not in the business of corresponding separately with the parties. When the parties write to the Commission, they should be copying in or sending a copy of the same correspondence to the other party in order to ensure that there's transparency. But can't emphasise that enough. Rather, if you are corresponding with the Commission, you must correspond with the other party at the same time.
So say a member's considered putting in an F10 or not, they've done that. How do they actually prepare for a day at the Commission?
So we're talking about conciliation, and really I think there are two things to focus on. One is the preparation of submissions, and the second thing to focus on is the preparation of the file itself.
Okay, so how would you suggest a member prepares for submissions on the day?
So there's no set way. My own preference is a somewhat narrative approach where I would write out what I would propose to say. Other people might use dot points. I think we've all worked with someone at some point who is able to go to the Commission without having done that preparation, and great pearls of wisdom simply fall out of their mouth as they speak. And if you're one of those people, then good luck to you. But the rest of us need to prepare.
So how should members do that?
Well, I think the way to do that is make sure that you have an answer to each one of the assertions that's made in the F10, even if it means doing some research and engaging with someone else in your organisation to get to the bottom of something. And that is a task that will fall to people and culture and HR people quite regularly. Make sure that you can tell the full story as required and provide the detail, but also make sure that you can sum up the issues in a really short and succinct way so that you can distill the essence of the dispute. Be completely organised and completely thought out, and be prepared to abandon it at a moment's notice.
So what do you mean about abandoned?
Conciliation is a really flexible thing, and the way in which conciliation is conducted is really up to the discretion of the individual member of the Fair Work Commission. It may well be that a member of the Commission hears from each party, and you will get a chance to go through your incredibly well-crafted and well-thought-out submissions as you see fit. But the Commission doesn't have to do that. The Commission may instead ask the parties simply to sum up their position, The Commission may, from the materials, have progressed some way in their thinking and may simply want to ask you questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to be a bit agile, a bit flexible about how you go about that in order to provide to the Commission what the Commission is seeking from you rather than just sticking to a script.
So given that, why would one of our members prepare? Does it sound like a waste of time? Or
What I would say is that the act of preparing your submissions
mm-hmm.
Helps you prepare for those other things.
Mm-hmm.
It puts you in a better position to respond to the needs of the Commission if you have prepared your submissions in detail. So it may well be that you don't get to read through the submission that you've crafted, but the act of preparing that submission puts you in a better place to respond to any question that the Commission may have for you.
So with submissions, how long should they be?
Yeah, I think what you're looking to do is to communicate in the simplest and most direct form possible what the issues are. You're not looking to test the patience of the Commission. And I think if a member of the Commission looks disinterested, then they probably are.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not making eye contact with you, you should get a sense as to whether the member of the Commission is engaging with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not seeking to... There's no reward for the longest submission. You're looking to be clear, you're looking to be succinct, you're looking to get to the point.
Mm-hmm. So what about filing or files?
Yeah, files should be really organised, and that's going to help you out when you get to the Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you have a complete file. Make sure that it's well ordered so that you are able to find things within that file at short notice.
Mm-hmm.
It's really common in the context of a dispute for there to be a focus on a particular document or a correspondence, an email, whatever the case may be, and you want to be able to reach those things.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, you want to be able to assist the Commission. If there is a reference in a submission from your opponent, for example, to a particular document and it's characterised in a particular way but not produced, it's good to be able to find that document at short notice so that you can counter the way it's been characterised quite quickly. The other thing I would say is that if you are seeking to rely on a document, bring spares,
mm-hmm.
Not just for the Commission, not just for your own copy, but also for your opponent, just to ensure that you're really giving conciliation the best chance of success.
So what about any other tips for our members?
I would say that there's one more thing. Think very carefully as to who's going to conciliation.
Mm-hmm.
That is the dynamic in the room. And what you're seeking to do is create a dynamic where the chances of resolution are at their greatest. Most disputes will resolve through conciliation. But sometimes there are some kinds of disputes that come to people in culture or HR people, and once they get into it, it becomes apparent that there may be a substantive dispute, but there's also a personality dispute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's open to an HR person or a people in culture person to think about changing the dynamic in order to open up the opportunity for resolution. So think about who's on your team. Usually you want someone on your team who can deal with all the factual issues and all the things that you as a people and culture person are mm-hmm. privy to directly so that you can counter that. But you also need to think about the dynamic.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about conciliation and a dispute. What about when you can't resolve or it doesn't resolve at the Commission, or what about arbitration?
So in terms of arbitration is something that happens when either the matter is not resolved and mm-hmm. the parties agree that it won't be resolved through conciliation, or the member of the Commission forms a view that it can't be resolved by conciliation.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of arbitration, there are some different rules with respect to that, which we might do in another podcast. And
mm-hmm.
similarly, we haven't talked about how to actually conduct the conciliation process itself,
mm-hmm.
that is being in the room and how you should conduct yourself, but we'll do a separate podcast for that as well.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
So Emma, thank you so much for asking me those questions, for having that discussion with regards to how to prepare for the Commission.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that there's any better way to conclude our discussion than with another reading from the Winning Ways section of how to win at Scrabble. ZQXJ. These four letters furnish opportunities for big scores.